amigos! What up, everybody? It's your boy, Duke. Welcome back to the Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 45, Vamos Amigos. It kind of feels like forever since we got together, doesn't it? It does. Honestly, the schedule just keeps falling on holidays. The Wednesday time for recording has worked for 44 straight episodes, 43, I guess. But then it was Christmas, right? Wednesday the 25th was Christmas. We had to get a Boxing Day podcast up, so we put that on the 23rd. And then it was freaking New Year's Day, and everyone's too hungover to get up and get anything done. So even though your boy was raring to go, we put it off another week. And amongst all of that, I'm back. I re-upped with Elite Fantasy. So as of January 1st, you'll get a lot more of me, your boy, on both the DFS side and the betting side. And while we're on that topic, of course, as always, I am your host, Duke. You can find me on Twitter at DukeDFS. All of my DFS action, which has been crushing, by the way, over at EliteFantasy.com, and all of my sports betting picks, mostly soccer, over at EliteSportsBetting.com. Big things around the corner for me personally, but also for this podcast as well. The good news is we aren't going anywhere. I teased it before Christmas. Big news coming. And no matter where I ended up, the Talking Soccer Pod was not going away. It was going to continue. But this was the big news. I'm staying. Couldn't be more excited to be back where it all started for the long term. Get ready for more of this. And we're talking about doing one day, maybe 2 days, maybe 3 days. We aren't quite sure how this is going to evolve, but you'll get at least your weekly episode from me talking a little soccer. So it is January 8th, Wednesday, and because it's January, it's a transfer season. I put it out on Twitter. What do you want to hear about? And we had a couple questions come in. Both of them shot back pretty quick, actually. Two of the questions talking about the transfer window. So that's what will be the main topic for today. I've gone through the rosters of the top half of the league and listed what I think each of those teams needed. And in that discussion, we'll answer a few of those questions there. And my man Lincoln Log 55 on Twitter asked, who killed Jeffrey Epstein? Look, I try to keep these things 25, 30 minutes. There's not enough time in the world to delve into that topic. So I'll simply say it was not Jeffrey Epstein. And I'm leaning towards the Clintons. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. We're moving on. It is the silly season. It's the transfer season. And let's just do it right from the top. We will talk a little EPL weekend action here towards the end of the podcast. But we'll go through the transfer bits first and then look at some of the games from this weekend, this upcoming weekend here of EPL action. Number 10. This is current table. Arsenal sitting number 10. And this actually brings us to our first question right here from @mdaily1801 on Twitter. Michael asks, why are Arsenal linked to big name transfers every window and they end up going to anywhere but Arsenal? Good question, Michael. Thanks for the shout out and the question there on Twitter. Look, welcome to the world of blogs, newspapers, TV shows. People need clicks. Clicks sell ads. Ads pays bills. So try being a United fan, for God's sakes. I think literally they were linked to 100 players between last March and the start of the Premier League series. Dead serious. The Premier League season. Dead serious. But that's all it is. It's just fodder. It's just newspaper fodder. There are a few journalists on Twitter who are actually quite decent as far as reporting on transfer news. Obviously, they're not hitting 100%. But we can assume everyone else is all BS. It's all for clicks. It's all for likes. It's why most people on the internet do anything to get some clout, to get their name out there, to get a better job, to get a better paycheck. But specific to Arsenal, they also have some budget restrictions that come into play. So, yeah, they can be linked with a bunch of different players, and they do have some holes. We'll talk about that here in just a second. But I can't see them in any window unless there's a major change in the ownership where Arsenal are bringing in two or three big-name expensive players. It's just not in the cards. You look at Nicola Pepe. They bought him on credit, basically, right? They're on a payment plan with Lille due to their financial situation. So while they will be linked with big-name players, they are a big club in a sense. They just don't have the budget specifically, certainly to buy all these players they're linked with, let alone more than just one, maybe two in a particular window. But specifically, January, man, maybe just one is all they're really going to bring in. Let's talk about Arsenal's plans for January. Number one, they got the biggest item on their wish list taken care of. They got their manager and Mikel Arteta, who's had a decent start to life in the red and white of Arsenal. What they really need for me, in my opinion, is a world-class center back. Mustafi and Socrates, that ain't it, Chief. They certainly have other holes that I think they need to fill, but it actually looks like maybe Arteta can get Ozil to run a little bit, which helps the other 10 players on the field defend when there isn't an Ozil-shaped cone once they lose the ball, which is what it's been for like the last 5 or 6 years. So if he's coming into form, Martinelli, the young Brazilian's coming on, Pepe finding his feet, I think they're actually okay up front. Obviously, Lacazette, Aubameyang, good players. What they really need to do is shore up the middle of that defense. I've seen Upamecano mentioned. He'd be a delightful signing for Arsenal. I think David Luiz is okay. He's useful if he had the right guy next to him. Maybe someone with a little bit more pace, like an Upamecano. So I think center back is the main piece that Arsenal needs to look for in this transfer window. Defensively, okay on the sides. You know, got Bellerin. You got Tierney, who's still finding his feet in the league. Kolasinac, Maitland-Niles, I really rate. Look more towards the middle of that defense there. And if Ozil can work, and you get another center back with Torreira, Guendouzi, Xhaka, I guess, although they should get rid of him ASAP, they can move their way up the table here. Number 9, Crystal Palace. Look, I got to give Roy Hodgson a little credit because I give him a lot of shit because he plays defensive football. But just look at this roster. It's not very good. To be in the top half at this point is actually a pretty dang good accomplishment. And honestly, their goal is to just survive another window, hanging on to Wilf Zaha. They might be able to get someone to pay over the odds for him, but then who do you get to replace him? Who do you get to replace his ability on the ball, his creativity? That money will likely be banked until the summer, and now you've lost your attacking force in a team that already struggles to score goals. So hanging on to Zaha is really their main focus. But outside of that, they need a center forward. They need someone who can score a goal. And Benteke looks like he could be on the way out. I actually don't mind Benteke. But Connor Wickham is now back healthy. He can do exactly what Benteke can do. A little bit younger. Has some injury issues. But if you can loan or sell Benteke, still get a little bit from Jordan Ayew. Get Connor Wilkham holding the ball up. Go find a young number 9 to score a few goals. Even a loan of like Moise Keane would be amazing for Crystal Palace. But that's not going to happen. But that kind of profile of a player, a young player, maybe just coming on who's scoring some goals to give them a little reassurance up front would do wonders for Crystal Palace. I'd be surprised if they finish in the top half. You know, obviously, Everton's not in the top half at the moment. Southampton's working their way up the table. Arsenal's probably going to jump from here the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. Hang on to Zaha. Stay in the top half. Print that check, Roy Hodgson. Just don't die too, Roy Hodgson. Jesus, he's like 85 years old. Just stay alive and keep Wilf Zaha. That is the goal for Crystal Palace. Now, how about number 8, Sheffield United? Look, just give Chris Wilder the Manager of the Year award already. Sheffield 8th in the table. After the new year, had to be something like plus 20,000 preseason as far as odds go. It just wasn't on the cards. However, his team works their socks off, extremely organized. They manufacture enough scoring to grab wins here or there, but that is their issue. However, I think Moisette is actually a decent player. He can play at this level, but their other forwards are there mostly just to be the first line of defense. Work their socks off. They're not there to bang in goals. McGoldrick is hilarious to watch. If you haven't watched Sheffield play, McGoldrick is buzzing all over the field. The second he gets his shoulders squared to the goal and he takes a shot, everyone in the stands should be covering their faces, shoulders, loved ones, because there's no chance that ball is hitting the frame of the goal. They need a number 9. Look, and they're just not out there. It won't be easy. Who wants to go to Sheffield either? We'll talk a little bit about Leicester later and why players would want to leave them, but Sheffield look awesome, doing really well to be number 8 in the league after the new year. Probably not going down, right? But who wants to go play in this system? Not me. And I'm sitting on my couch right now. It won't be easy, but a goal scorer would be great. Look, there's no way Olivier Giroud makes this move, but he'd do well at Sheffield United. Works hard enough. and is good enough, technical enough to provide that difference in the final third. I'm not even sure Sheffield wants to push on for a Europa League spot. I think number eight suits them just well. So a forward would do them really well. Number seven, Wolves, nothing. I think they bank whatever money they have for the summer and see how they finish. They won't have enough to get to the Champions League this year. Europa League nearly killed them this year, got off to a really slow start. What they need is squad depth, which they could add in January, right? But likely won't be until the summer. So keep on doing what you're doing, Wolverhampton Wolves. All right, here we go. Tottenham, number six. They desperately need a forward, right? Are you noticing a theme here? Goal scorers. You wonder why they're so expensive. Harry Kane out injured. Parrott looks like he's not quite ready to make the jump to the big leagues. Their young forward who has a lot of promise. They have to buy someone in January and fill that gap. Lucas Moura, Fernando Llorente, they were there last year. They were serviceable once Harry Kane went out. But that felt a little bit more like luck than a plan that can be repeated. So Llorente's gone, as is Pochettino. Mourinho will want his guys. They also need a CDM. They need a left back if Rose is leaving. They need a lot, honestly. And if Lloris doesn't come back anytime soon, they need a keeper because Gazzaniga is just an Argentinian Joe Hart. Mourinho would do well to get them the top four, but without any signings, they might not even be top seven. Seriously, Wolves are making a little run here, finally staying healthy, getting goals. Adama Traore looks like a beast. They could jump him. Tottenham could be in a bad way. And like I've said all along, it's all rainbows and sunshine when you're winning. But when Mourinho starts losing, that's when the real Mourinho comes out. And that tight checkbook of Daniel Levy better get opened up because they have a lot of holes in this roster. Did well to re-sign Toby Alderweireld. I think Davinson Sanchez is decent. Aurier looks okay. Kyle Walker-Peters, no idea what happened to him. Left back's an issue. CDM's an issue. Eric Dyer, not a Premier League player anymore. Number nine, Harry Kane. Who's going to score the goals? Going to put Lucas Moura there? You got to get Son back. Dele Alli playing out of his mind. Bravo to Mourinho for getting that. Is he going to experience a dip in form? Tottenham's got a lot of holes. Not as many holes as number five, Manchester United. Oh, my God. What do they need? Well, a tactical plan would be nice. You can't buy that in January. What they really need are midfielders. Midfielders, yes, two, and a center back. Pogba just had surgery. Matic moves slower than most of the players in your over 40 leagues at your local park. Fred, who's been brilliant, is bound to get hurt with the number of games he's being forced to play. Herrera has shown he can't play anything other than a number 10. He's not even very good at that. McTominay is hurt as well. So without reinforcements, Manchester United will be forced to look to youth. Angel Gomez, who I think should get some more games, and James Garner may be called upon sooner than Ole would like. But they need two midfielders, two, and likely won't buy any. It hurts my soul. There's also the not-so-small matter of Harry Maguire. Just hurt his hip. Brilliant. Axel Tuanzebe should be able to slide right in, but he's hurt. Bailly looked like a first 11 player, but he's always hurt right now. Marcus Rojo hurt. Fosu Mensah hurt. Everybody is hurt, so they're dangerously low on depth, especially considering I wouldn't start Phil Jones in my U12 girls team I used to coach. So they need a minimum of three players to maintain top six, let alone push for top four, which I think is gone. Even though they're number five now, I just can't see them busting through to get to the top four. So they need a center mid, and a center back. And before we move on, I've had a couple of you guys talk to me about the Manchester United situation, and the American owners, the Glazer family, who also owns the Buccaneers. Saw a really interesting thread on Twitter today from @TFWriter, WRITER, that we'll talk through here. Just a few of these tweets in a second. But, you know, we talked about Arsenal having all these limitations as far as their budget goes because of their owners. Manchester United experiences a similar issue, but for very different reasons. Manchester United, one of the richest clubs in the world, still refuses to spend the money. And here's a little bit why. I'll just read these through. Obviously, talking about the Glazers and since they bought the club. Let's see here. Let's start this thread with some stats. Some of this is recycled information. Like I said, you may have heard this from me before, but currently Manchester United has debt of 511 million pounds. This is from a club who was never in debt in their entire history, hundreds of years until the Glazers took over. As of the latest accounts submitted in June 2019, that debt stands at 511 million pounds. With the majority of repayments barely touching the actual debt, at the current rate, it would take Manchester United over 150 years to be debt-free again. In 2005, the Glazers' leveraged buyout saddled the club with $540 million of debt, meaning that the debt has been reduced by just 44 million pounds in 14 years. He has a fancy graph of the timeline of the debt. And actually, just before 2010, that debt rose to 754 million pounds. What else happened that year? The United, Manchester United sold Cristiano Ronaldo to help pay down that debt. Insanity. Insanity. How much interest have they paid on this debt? 806 million pounds of interest. And interest alone. So essentially, just to service the debt that the Glazers placed on the club by buying the club, they've spent 806 million pounds on interest. Not players to reinforce and maintain the success that had been set prior to their purchase, just to pay off the interest. And just to give you some perspective, it took United 13 years under the Glazers to spend this amount. 806 million in 13 years. Shirt sales, they've brought in 452 million pounds. How about the stock exchange? Since it was launched in 2012, 452 million worth of shares also were sold. So literally, they post the site or the team on the New York Stock Exchange, 452 million pounds worth of shares have been sold, none of which has been reinvested in the club. Since September, the Glazers also issued a preliminary prospectus to sell up to 322 million pounds more of shares, more money that won't go into the club. Glazer dividends, 89 million pounds. In 2012, unlike the likes of Man City and Liverpool, Manchester United decided to commence dividend payments. Since 2012, 89 million pounds has been paid to the Glazers, with an additional 21 million to other shareholders. Once again, money being taken out of the club. The latest dividend was taken just last week in the middle of the transfer window, where Manchester United are struggling to make any additions to a depleted squad. A further 9 million pounds dividend is expected to be taken in June, which will take the total figure to 98 million pounds. How about directors' fees? 92 million pounds. Over the last 11 years, $92 million has been taken in directors' fees, of which the Glazers take a significant slice. They also made $8 million before they listed the team on the stock exchange in consulting fees. Look, it keeps going on and on and on. And like I said, it's at TF Ryder if you're interested in the damage that this group has done to this club. But when you think about just the buying power that United could have, if these blood-sucking Americans, God dang it, didn't own this team, 806 million pounds in interest paid. Woo! That could buy some forwards. That could buy some midfielders. That could buy a center back. I'll tell you that much. F the Glazers, man. Glazers out. So, yes, United needs two center midfielders and a center back and a number nine and a right mid. Ugh. Brutal. Anyway, number four, Chelsea. Go check that thread out. There's about another 15, 20 tweets. Just going through the impact that it's had and how insane it is that this money is being stolen from the club through their ownership. Anyway, number four, Chelsea, Frank Lampard. Awesome job by him with this young-ish squad, right? It's hard to call them too young, the likes of Willian, Pedro, Azpilicueta, et cetera. But they do have a lot of young players in their top four at this point. Didn't expect that prior to the season. They're missing a little something to push on and really challenge these top three. And what they're really missing is a dynamite center attacking mid. Look, Jorginho does a lot of the playmaking from deep. But when Chelsea were really on, really playing well, Mason Mount was the catalyst from the cam position for a lot of it. His form come back to earth, as it probably does typically with younger players. And Chelsea are struggling with goals from the midfield. So, look, this might be an oddball call here, but someone like Kai Havertz or even Mario Götze, who's out of a contract this summer, you can get him on a cheap from Dortmund could do well in the system, push them home for a top four. Willian isn't getting any younger, and I still think Conte is being used incorrectly. But overall, they have a solid squad, so their Cam, center attacking mid, is where I think they can upgrade. I think Tammy Abraham's fine. If they can hold on to Drew, good at forward. If not, perhaps they look for depth there. But I don't see them spending hundreds of millions of pounds in this transfer window. Obviously, just got Hudson Odoi back, which is a bit like a signing. So he's doing well as of late. Now let's get to the big three. Man City, number three. Holy hell, did they look good against United in the Carabao Cup. What they could really use is for players to get healthy. I mean, you think about Leroy Sané has been out all year. And I think people forget just how damn good he is. Electric pace. And we'll see if he still has that after the ACL injury I think he suffered. I think he tore everything in his knee. So when he comes back for that, we'll see if he comes back 100%. But how about Laporte? Nearly back from injury there. Should shore up the back line a little bit. They could use a young center attacking mid coming through the system. Oh, they have maybe the best one in the world just knocking on the door in Phil Foden. So this team has literally everything. Just clean up the training room a little bit. Maybe bring in, I don't even know, what? What do they need? I'm not enamored with Kyle Walker, but they have Cancelo. Maybe a world-class left back. They could steal Jordi Alba. Maybe Marcelo even comes in and fits this system well. Nah, they'll just keep it what they have. Just get healthy and push on for that Champions League. I think the title's gone. Liverpool have won the title. They're in a few cup competitions, so maybe they can use some youth and some depth there. But focus for that Champions League. Get healthy and go win at City. Number two, Leicester. How about Leicester being number two? You know what they could really use? They could really use a dangerous winger. They have Harvey Barnes. They have Damari Gray. I love both those young players. I like them quite a bit, actually, but they aren't consistent enough for a true title challenge, which is wild to be talking about with Leicester City. And look, surely they could use some center forward depth, but it looks like Iheanacho's showing up, got a goal again today in the Carabao Cup when he came on. He's getting the job done when called upon. Truthfully, they need to be scouting for their replacement when James Maddison leaves, likely in the summer, not in January. Hold on to him. He's so pivotal to everything they do from an attacking standpoint. And he has that freedom thanks to the beast behind him in Wilf Ndidi. Absolute monster who covers ground like no one else in the Premier League. But for now, a winger would make this attack even more explosive than it is. And that brings us to our next question from my boy Micah, who is at Scrubosaurus MTG on Twitter, who asked, why would anyone leave Leicester? It's a valid question. And look, for starters, I completely understand why Conte and Mahrez left Leicester after their title a few years ago. Leicester are a small club who were just in a relegation battle prior to the rise to this championship. That's what made it so unlikely. They have a small stadium. They play counterattacking football. It's a tiring system that not many players want to play in. But now, they no longer play that system. Brendan Rodgers has come in. He's implemented this free-flowing, possession-based system. The owner, unfortunately, tragically passed in a helicopter accident, but the son is now running the club. The club is strong. The manager is good. The success they're having now seems relatively sustainable. Surely, they won't be relegated anytime soon. So, why now would anyone leave Leicester? Wages. Prestige. Social media presence. System, to an extent, look, the way Leicester are playing now, it's fine. Looks fun, right? They're scoring goals. You know what's really fun? Playing for City, playing for Liverpool, playing for Bayern Munich and Barcelona. And those are the types of clubs that would be buying players off of Leicester. And it's tough to compete with. Hell, even Man United has a 75,000-seat stadium and hundreds of millions of fans worldwide. The sponsorship fields or opportunities off the field with these other clubs is bringing in a ton of extra money. So really, it comes down to two things, competing for major trophies and money. I love Leicester to death. I love the hire they made of Brendan Rodgers. I like the youth that's coming through the club. Are Leicester going to win a Champions League title? No. Are Leicester going to build a 60,000-seat stadium? Probably not. did these kids grow up just hoping and wishing they could play for Leicester? No, not many English kids, let alone foreigners, who were so important to the league's success, grew up Leicester fans. But they remember that treble from United in 99, right? They remember Liverpool winning their 6 Champions League titles. It's harsh on Leicester, but that's the reality. It's like getting an offer from the Yankees or the Lakers or the Patriots. These are teams who've had sustained success throughout our childhood. And these kids are freaking young, man. We got 17-year-olds who were born in 2004. It's crazy. Mass terrible. It's insane. So look, Leicester are doing really well with what they're doing, but you have to understand who you're competing with. And it's kind of an honor, right? Leicester is doing so well and developing players so much that the likes of Man United and Barcelona and Man City and Bayern Munich and Chelsea, right, with Conte, are buying players off of you. So keep doing what you're doing, Leicester, and go get a winger. That's what you need to push on, a reliable winger, consistent, world-class winger. Now, where are you going to get that in January? You probably aren't. But look towards the summer to find that replacement for Madison and then perhaps that extra player just to kick them on to the next level. And can Jamie Vardy keep scoring goals? Jesus, he's 32. He's a player based almost entirely on pace and still getting it done. Insanity. That has to come to an end at some point. But how about number one, maybe in the world, Liverpool? What the hell do you get the guy who has everything, right? I'm sitting there wondering what the heck to get my dad for Christmas. Dude's got everything. Anything he needed, he can just go buy. So what the heck do I get him? I ended up going to find a couple of books, like $4 books that I knew he'd probably read on the beach. You know, like, what do you get someone who has everything? And that's kind of where Liverpool are right now. They've built nearly the perfect squad. So what I would suggest they do is go out and get cover for Andrew Robertson, their left back. James Milner is not the answer at left back. Love him to death. He's a model of fitness, how to be professional past the age of 30. He is not the cover for left back. That's the one position that can't afford an injury. If Robbo is the key for the Champions League title and the Premier League title, and he goes down and you didn't get cover, you'd feel a little silly, considering that's the one hole. Plenty of depth in the midfield, the attacking 3-4-5, if you consider Shaqiri in there, all good. So go get a backup left back for Robertson. Those wingbacks are so important to their system. Joe Gomez can slide out, play on the right side. If TAA picks up a knocker, they need to be more defensive. On the left side, what do you have? You have freaking James Milner? Go get your left back. So there it is. You can see plenty of teams need help in the attacking side, but then the really great teams, you're just fine-tuning near perfection. Liverpool left back, City's got to get healthy. Both of those teams have a really decent shot at taking down the Champions League title. Now, who's going to realistically get signed for any of these teams? Probably no one. No one. Because here's the issue. It's January. All these really, really good players that you want to bring in, guess what? They're really, really good for their current team. So unless they have a release clause, like we saw with Minamino and Haaland from Salzburg, RB Salzburg. How are you going to pry these players away from their current teams? Is Edinson Cavani available? Looks like Icardi's first choice at PSG. Scored 3 goals today. We hit that over, 6.5. Bang. Hit that live. Maybe go grab an Edinson Cavani. Is he going to go to Sheffield United? Nope. Could he go to Man United? Sure. Could he go to Tottenham? I think that'd be a good start. Maybe Jose looks to him. Where are you going to find a decent left back for cover for Liverpool? I mean, all these players that you're trying to bring in are reliable, good players for their current teams. So where you look is for maybe that secondary team who's sitting 5th, 6th in the league and a team that only has 3 going to the Champions League. And you grab their forward. You grab their left winger. You grab their center midfielder. They need that cash injection. You're going to play over the odds, but they need that cash injection for their summer transfer plans, and you get a decent signing to take you home for the rest of the year. More likely than not, it's going to be squad players that are brought in from smaller leagues or older players who can provide a little bit of help for a few months. That's just the reality of the January transfer window. The teams with the players know you need them desperately and are willing to pay more than they should. And in order to do that, you have to have an owner with purse strings that are willing to be opened. Will Daniel Levy get there? Will Arsenal open the checkbook? Will Manchester United open the checkbook? A lot of interesting questions. I can't wait to see how the rest of the league pays out. Oh, but ignore the rumors, guys. Ignore the rumors. They're going to come. They're going to go. You'll be linked with a million different players. Look up their highlights on YouTube. Go get excited. And then just understand the squad you have is probably the squad you're going to have at the end of January. It's like you play the lottery game, right? The lottery gets up to $700 million. Of course you go buy a ticket. You know why? Because for $1 or $2, it's fun to think about all the crap you'd buy with $700 million for a day or two, isn't it? All right, let's look to this weekend's action. I think everyone's going to play. 7:30 a.m. Crystal Palace plus 305, hosting Arsenal minus 120. How about Arsenal? Minus 120 away. The difference Arteta has made. Bright and early, we'll be talking about this game more on the opening line on Friday, which will be posted on YouTube. And, of course, I'll retweet from my Twitter account, at DukeDFS, once that goes live. We'll be recording that on Friday, so we'll talk about that game more then. 10 o'clock games on Saturday. Chelsea hosting Burnley. Chelsea, a monster favorite there. Three total, a little juice on the under. Tammy Abraham, big-time scoring odds. I just happened to put that up in the FPL article today. Chelsea likely to get a win there. Everton minus 120 hosting Brighton. Everton minus 120. Carlo Ancelotti, bit of a rocky start to life. And he's got the same problems that Marco Silva had. Who is going to score the goals? Looks like Calvert-Lewin is rounding into form. But he's like that center in basketball who you run zero plays for but gets the offensive rebound and the dunk and fills the stat sheet that way. He's a rebound guy. He's the hustle guy. He's the one causing the problems in the box and then finally grabbing a goal off his knee. Who knows what? Young player with a ton of pace and can jump out of the building. So perhaps they get him going there. 2.5 total, minus 120 juice on the over. Brighton playing some good football, but struggle away from home. Leicester, minus 190. We just talked about him against a resurgent Southampton who sit 12th in the table. We're in the relegation battle just a couple weeks ago, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. Now sitting 12th on 25 points. Leicester minus 190, Southampton plus 500. Three total there, slight juice on the under. Interesting style and systems. Interesting matchup as far as style goes and systems, I should say. We'll see if Southampton go to the back four or the back three with the wingbacks in Bertrand and Suarez. Manchester United, monster favorite over Norwich. Don't know why. It's at home. It's at Old Trafford. The total sitting at 3, minus 120 on the over, even goals or even money on the under. Ugh, I mean, I don't know. Did you watch the game against Manchester United? Who is going to come on to make that performance better? Martial didn't start. Greenwood looks like one for the future, but can't lead the line from the start. So maybe Rashford, Martial, and Dan James start again for the 40th time this season. Issues at the back line. Norwich probably going to score. Minus 345. I won't be paying that. Hopefully at United get the win, but I won't be paying that. Wolves minus 220 against Newcastle plus 600. 2.5 total plus 105 on the over, minus 125 on the under. Understandably, the lowest total in that 10 a.m. slate. So I will be going through all of these games in detail over to leapfantasy.com with my back of the net article out Thursday afternoon. Obviously hitting that from a DFS perspective and also talking about the betting angle over at elitesportsbetting.com. Big favorites there, though, obviously, in Chelsea and Manchester United. Guessing the likes of Tammy Abraham, Willian, Rashford will garner most of the ownership there. Probably high prices, too, as well. I haven't seen the pricing yet from DK there. The 12:30 game, the afternoon hammer, should be a blinder. Tottenham plus 335. Hosting the champs, Liverpool minus 140. Three total there, even money on the over, minus 120 on the under. Interesting total to me. To me, that says that Tottenham probably not going to score because I see Liverpool scoring at least one goal, if not two. The inference being Tottenham grabs a goal and we're at our three total. Liverpool could run rampant. Tottenham, absolute shambles at the back, which is surprising under Jose. You'd hope he would come in and shore things up, but perhaps the issues run deeper than we saw with Pochettino. Really, I think the issue comes from in front of the back four. I'm not in love with the back four as well, but Harry Winks, not great. Eric Dyer, traffic cone. Where's Wanyama? Sissoko, not really a CDM, but being played there because he has to be. I don't know. To me, in front of the back four is where the issues start. Liverpool, obviously they like to get in behind and cause the issues there. Whew. If Jan Vertonghen starts, I'll just say this right now, 6:58 p.m. here on Wednesday the 8th. If Jan Vertonghen starts that 12:30 p.m. game Eastern Standard Time against Liverpool, hammer Liverpool. Hammer them. Mo Salah versus Jan Vertonghen, give me a break. Sunday, just two games. I will have a Sunday Funday article out on LeafFantasy.com. Bournemouth +150, Watford +180. 2.5 total, -115, -105. What the hell is going on with Bournemouth? Eddie Howe, I know he's a Bournemouth legend, basically, right? Took him up through the leagues. He might be in trouble, especially if he loses this game to this resurgent Watford team who's up all the way to 19th place. But look, you got to admit, they're much better since Pearson came in. Decent side, tough to break down now. Bournemouth, you would hope, would be a big favorite at home against this tied side sitting in 19th. But shit, look, Bournemouth's right there in 18th. Just a point ahead of them. And in horrible, horrible form. So, interesting matchup there at 9 a.m. 11:30 a.m. game. Aston Villa hosting Man City. Aston Villa just went all out today in their Carabao Cup matchup. And I'm expecting a reduced side, we'll call it. Maybe even a youth side against Man City. City, obviously, big favorites there, -500. 3.5 total, -140 on the over. Team news will be huge there. I can't imagine that Villa will go hard in that game. I'm sure we'll see some starters from the usual 11, but in general, perhaps a rotated side there. So, once again, from a standard or from a DFS perspective, a lot of ownership on that City game there on Sunday morning if they do a two-game slate. Obviously going to be very expensive, so we'll have to get creative elsewhere. But that's going to do it. Transfer roundup. The silly season has begun. Big action this weekend on EPL. Of course, if there's anything else outside of those leagues that we can find to bet on, we're going to do it. We're going to do it, and we'll be in the chat rooms all weekend. I appreciate you guys tuning in, as always. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the Elite Fantasy Podcast Network. I know we got Mad Lab doing some MMA stuff on here now. I think we may be having some NBA stuff that's on this channel. Don't know if we'll keep it all under one header, but for now, you get a lot of great content from your boy and from the others. And that'll do it for this week's Talking Soccer Podcast. As always, you can find me on Twitter at DukeDFS. Hit me up with feedback, good and bad, what you want to see and hear on next week's podcast. Adios!